You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, I don't know if markets are still wrestling between new cases and extra liquidity flowing into markets from central banks. Judging by today, it's all about China. We saw shares in mainland China up 5.7% this morning, and that sent global stock markets to four-week highs. China's yuan headed for its best day against the dollar since December. We saw the MSCI All Country World Index, which tracks shares across 49 countries, up just under 1%. That's its highest since the beginning of June. European shares were on the up around 1.5% on the European Stock 600. At the open in the US, we saw Amazon breaking $3,000 for the first time, up 4%. And we gained just under 1% on the Aussie today to end the day up around 54,918 points, up 0.7%. Your street dogs tonight, Pietri Redlinghuis, founder of Herenia Capital, and Carl Jeevers, portfolio manager at Benguela Global Fund Managers. Carl, kick us off. The most hated rally in history has proven many times so far to be resilient, if nothing else. Sum up the mood for me out there today.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good evening, Michael. It's certainly a positive mood in terms of the markets and across the board, and our local market also being supported by, you know, it's liquidity driven. The money's got to find a home, a bit of risk on again, and ignoring the increasing cases globally. You know, it's not just South Africa. So I think the market looking through it and definitely putting some money on the table.
A record number of new cases in the US yesterday, and this is only expected to increase following the lack of any kind of physical distance that we saw, Pietri, as Americans celebrated Independence Day on Saturday as well. But stimulus shouldn't be underestimated.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not there. Yeah, I mean, like you say, free money forever, right? The Fed just prints. There's a whole bunch of memes. You know, money printer goes brrr, markets go up. People like Portnoy, I don't know what his first name is. You know, it's just maybe there's a bit of wisdom in what Warren Buffett's doing. You know, he's been taking a lot of flack for not being very active in this crash, because he did a whole bunch of really good deals in 2008, 2009, or 2008 particularly, when the markets were crashing. And, you know, he's not done anything. He's taken quite a bit of flak for that. What he has done is really sell airlines, right? So instead of scooping up bargains, he's been freeing up cash, right? So he had done one deal now, but it's relatively small. It's $10 billion. He's got something like $139 billion worth of cash that he can deploy. But maybe his patience should be a signal to us, because the reality of the fact is that it is still getting worse in places in certain spots in America, well, all throughout America. We know that the sort of death reports follow around 2 weeks after the new cases reports. So, yes, new cases are going up and deaths are going down, but that correlation could change at some point. We know that the problem of people dying is not necessarily because the virus killed them, but because they can't get access to treatment, and they can't get access to treatment because the hospitals are overrun, right? Mm. So I don't think that free money solves the problem. I think, you know, market, there's a lot of it. The money has to find a home. You're quite right. So it goes into equities and out goes the markets. But that is not reflective of what is really happening economically. There's a number of different things. Obviously, South Africa, is the impact here is different, but the unemployment situation is real, and it's getting worse. The situation in the U.S., if they go back to hard lockdown, there's no way that their economy recovers by the end of the year. I don't know. It feels a little illogical to me.
It certainly does, and that's why we seem to be making fun of this rally as the most hated rally in history, Carl. But bringing you in here, we look at what's happening to companies, what's happening in the real economy. Comcar, the biggest trucking company, filing for bankruptcy. They've got 4,000 trucks. One of the oldest retail companies, JCPenney, filing for bankruptcy. We know that these were trends that were happening pre-COVID, but they've certainly been accelerated by COVID as well. The biggest car rental company, Hertz, filing for bankruptcy. And we see the biggest mall in America, Mall of America, stop paying mortgage payments. So sooner or later, all of this has got to catch up to markets. Markets don't seem to think, though, that will be the case. They just seem to be saying, well, the new winner is going to be Amazon. That's where we're going to be piling all of our free money. And hey, that's the play that market participants are making right now. As an investor, how do you play this? Do you just go along with that kind of momentum? Do you say, well, we've had a good rally since that sell-off in the middle of March. Perhaps I'm going to do a Warren Buffett and park a little bit more in cash now that we've seen a healthy return?
Yeah, I think certainly from an asset allocation point of view, there is a case to be made to maybe take some money off the table and hold it in cash and wait for opportunities to come along, because like you said, the evidence on the ground, and especially for vulnerable companies and companies with slightly weak balance sheets, and you mentioned JCPenney, it's been struggling. It's like the Edcon of South Africa has been struggling for quite some time, and finally this has got essentially the death knell for them. So I think you know, it's always dangerous to try and time the markets, but certainly after this rally, which has been quite significant, it is worth taking some profits and maybe waiting for some pullbacks, especially because on the ground things are not really getting better for a number of industries or sectors, and that might be where the opportunities might lie in the near future. But certainly, in terms of the tech stocks, they've received a lot of attention because they are there is a future for them. They can continue operating. They've done pretty well, actually, in the current environment. But again, you know, the price has probably run away from the fundamentals. And that's what, as investors, one has to be careful of, not to pay up for too much. And that's where Warren Buffett has been quite disciplined.
Yeah, he really has, sitting on a lot of cash. What is it, $130-140 billion? But he's decided finally, Pietri, to deploy some of that. And the big deal that's got everyone talking at the moment is the Dominion Energy transaction, $10 billion US deal for natural gas assets over there. And these are the kinds of deals that Warren Buffett likes. They're industries and sectors that he understands, and he's probably thinking that, you know, long term, this demand for a bridging fuel in natural gas is certainly one worth backing.
Well, he's pulling a Benjamin Graham move, right? Which is, I think, you know, who was his teacher, which is don't buy the mine when you can buy the railroad. So that deal is predominantly for pipeline and infrastructure storage and that kind of stuff. It's not actually natural gas mining or processing or refining. It's really just transportation of it, right? So that's a very, 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 very smart sort of move, I think, because, you know, regardless of what the price of the natural gas is, it still has to be moved, right, from one place to another. So I think that's quite an interesting move, and I think that it makes sense to sort of, you know, what investors need to how they need to think is really future oriented. What's going to continue to make money? What's going to really do well, regardless of what happens? And there's an opportunity now, obviously, for him to buy the stuff at a discount, so he does that. And it is relatively future oriented. I mean, I know that you know, we also prefer to be buying things in the oil sort of arena, but rather companies that service oil producers or companies that provide parts to oil rigs, rather than actually the oil companies themselves, if that makes sense. And this is kind of what Buffett is doing. So it'll be interesting to see that, you know, whether or not a larger scale pullback comes, and then if he really then starts deploying capital, or whether he's going to, if this is the start of him deploying capital now, I doubt it. I think he's probably going to sit in the sidelines and kind of wait it out for a bit to see whether or not the second wave thing happens. If that does the economy get sort of hurt even more? And if that happens, if he then starts deploying cash, it's probably what I think, you know, his next move will be.
Absolutely. That is, if we don't see the S&P going to 4,000, as some people are saying. But
We might, right? Because the S&P is the most concentrated now than it has ever been in history. And what is it concentrated in? You know, tech stocks. Mm-hmm. It's Facebook. It's Amazon. It's it's Google. It's basically the FANGs. FANG Man is the one I saw the other day. So it's basically FANGs, yeah. Including NVIDIA. And a couple of others. So it's Microsoft is in there as well. So it's it's basically the tech. The Nasdaq is predominantly the tech stocks, which is obviously leading the way. But short-term materials is the S&P 500 because over 50% of it at this stage is tech.
And that is Carl, to bring you in, one of those sectors that is going to own the rails of the new economy, to borrow what from Pietri was just saying. If you look at retail moving online, if you might want to look deeper into that value chain for opportunities, you might be saying, well, how do I get a stake in logistics firms or warehouse companies? That's certainly where we see a lot more positive interest in terms of property. Just don't go be buying any of those retail-focused REITs at the moment. I wanted to move on now to some companies specific news on the day. Steinhoff, some updates on the pending litigation issue there. Just a cool 10 billion euros worth of litigation. I mean, that's almost 200 billion rands worth. So before you even look at the financials, Carl, on this thing, you've got to have some kind of line of sight on all of those legal claims following that accounting scandal. And the stock responded quite positively to this announcement today by Steinhoff, which seems to indicate that a potential deal with the likes of ex-chairman Christo Wiese, who is suing the firm for 59 billion, could be in the offing.
Yeah, I mean, the move in Steinhoff share in terms of value is still quite small, but certainly maybe a bit of hope after last week's results, where they highlighted the 10 billion euro claims, and just today putting out a note saying that they're still debating the settlement value and then looking at a solution, and they'll do everything possible in the interest of shareholders. So I think maybe some people buying into that, speculating that the settlement might be a bit more favorable towards shareholders. But certainly I think it does point towards potential asset disposals, which would have to be the case to settle even a portion of that claim. But I think as it is, there's not that much left for shareholders after the debt pile and the claims.
Well, that debt pile alone, Pietri, 10 billion euros worth. If you look at what Pepco could be worth, some back of the matchbox calculations reckon around 5 billion euros there. How much is the rest of the group worth? If it includes all of those assets sold, how much is actually worth the group worth, even if it's all split up? That's even before the litigation impact. So certainly not a penny stock I'd be punting on against that backdrop.
Look, no. I think the investment case for Steinhoff now is really sort of backing a recovery of sorts, a way that they can recoup market share and reach profitability and kind of rise from the ashes, if you will. But from a fundamental sort of valuation perspective, there's, like you say, there's really not much reason to be invested in the company, unfortunately. I think the one thing that it has going for it is a track record of, it's been around for a very long time and has the ability and the assets that it can sweat to make money. The question is really around how much time it's going to need to come back to life as such.
Up the fundamental creek, that's what it is. Carl, Old Mutual now starts finally to put to bed its long-running CEO squabbles. It's appointed COO Ian Williamson permanently at the helm. He's been in an interim capacity. What do you see as his immediate priorities now to help put this really unpleasant boardroom spat behind the big green and to start to see some value? After all, we were sold as long-suffering shareholders the story around the demerger and the managed separation as one of unlocking value, and it's questionable as to whether or not much value has indeed been unlocked through all of this.
Yeah, Mitchell certainly has been a massive disappointment after the the coming home, or I don't know what you call it, of the group from London. And obviously the CEO issues have been a massive problem. So certainly I think in terms of Ian's appointment now as a permanent CEO, definitely bringing continuity. I think he's got enough, you know, he's got 30 years experience in the group, so operationally and technically certainly astute. Takes away the uncertainty, I think, from the shareholder point of view, and even for the operations, you know, the employees and management, takes away any uncertainty of leadership changes. And I think another positive is from an execution point of view, he certainly has that pedigree. You know, the market, I think, there's some arguments that the market expected it, but share price didn't react too positively. And you'd think after searching far and wide globally, that they're still stuck with who they are, who they had, which is similar to Tiger Brands, you know, searching far and wide and then sticking with who they had in place anyway as backup. So I think in terms of their strategy, probably not big changes with Ian in place, but I think just tightening the loose ends and bring some stability going forward. I mean, they've got a strong mass affluent division, and I think certainly COVID is, you know, bringing some challenges in terms of their distribution. So they'd have to rethink that and innovate. So it's a tough time to be at the helm of something like Old Mutual, but certainly off a low base. I think there's a lot of a lot of good that he can bring to the group and for shareholders.
Well, what a time to prove your mettle. I think a great time, in fact, as a CEO to come in. People are not expecting much, Pietri. It's a crisis. It's the middle of a global pandemic that has upended all orthodoxy. So the expectations are naturally muted and low. One can certainly only exceed expectations in an environment like this. But just lastly, what do we look out for in markets this week ahead locally and globally? What's on the agenda?
Petri, you can go ahead.
No, it's fine. After you, sir.
No, I mean, in terms of the SA market, we've got consumer confidence coming through, I think, tomorrow. They're expected to drop further, and there's no surprise. You know, we'll see what that comes out of. But on the ground, obviously, the consumer under a lot of pressure, so probably some negative news there. And then manufacturing production, also a decline expected on a year-on-year basis because of the lockdown. Other than that, not massive news in the SA market.
All terribly civilized and polite. Thank you very much, chaps. Carl Cheever, Portfolio Manager at Benguela Global Fund Managers, and Pietri Redling-Hayes, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors. One thing I did find very odd today is the move in Naspers down 0.8%, while China was up 5.7%, and one would have expected a much bigger move in Tencent. We'll be getting stuck into that tomorrow.